Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. It's Season 2, Episode 98. Dave, we are in the thick of it, down to the end of draft evaluation for people, and today is the fateful day, Dave. Hallelujah, Hosanna, all that stuff. Mike Wallace Watch is now officially 10 hours and 5 minutes till it's over.
I opened up Twitter today. David started off wishing everybody a happy Mike Wallace is not getting an offer sheet day.
So, I love it.
So, yeah, you know, there's some, and I posted about this on Steelers Depot this morning, kind of recapping it and all and everything. And, you know, there's some, I think there's, you know, discrepancy as far as if it's 4 o'clock today or if it's, you know, midnight tonight. Mark Cabali from the Trib says a league source has told him it's 11:59, while Adam Schefter tweeted just about 45 minutes ago that it's 4 o'clock Eastern time. So,
and it looks like Mark, he actually just confirmed to me again on Twitter that he talked to league sources. I mean, you know, obviously Adam's good. He hasn't been very good on this Mike Wallace thing, and maybe he just missed that. So, you know, it would seem to make sense that it'd be 4 o'clock, but, you know, if he got confirmed from a league source, looks like it'll be midnight tonight. So we'll burn the midnight oil one more evening.
Shall we call it semantics?
Semantics, right, exactly. We're playing with deck chairs on something that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like watching the Titanic in 3D, right? The boat still sinks, right?
Yeah, the boat still sinks. Mike Wallace didn't get an offer.
Yeah, and you know, just to wrap it up, I mean, we've nailed this to death here and all. You know, people that think he's going to be traded, David and I both. You know, if you missed a previous podcast, David and I don't think that's going to happen on draft day. They got him by the short ones right now, as far as the deadline in mid June to reduce his tender. Whether or not he signs a long term deal after that, heading into the training camp, that's up to Mike Wallace, but. It's safe to say I'm pretty sure both of us have agreed all along he's going to be in a uniform this year.
He'll be in Denver, barring injury, lined up on the outside with Ben to open the season. And with that, we will just confirm on Tuesday that actually happened. But let's move on. For the first time, really, since the beginning of March, Dave, there isn't a lot of news in Steelerland. There's no, you know, we've had a kind of a transaction every couple days, seemingly. All the draft visits are obviously now finished. You on your on SteelersDepot.com, people can go and see all the guys who came and visited the Steelers. They're allowed to have 30 guys come and visit. Obviously, then they had the local kids, the Pitt, I think even West Virginia and Penn State, some of those kids can come and they don't count as visits. But you can follow Dave's stuff, and they've done a great job of keeping that up to date. And the Steelers have actually been kind of more forthcoming and making that information more readily available. So that makes it better for all of us, Dave. But now we are, next Thursday night, I'll be at Steeler Draft Headquarters, primetime, 8 to 11. I think is when the draft is scheduled to happen. The Steelers picking 24th, obviously. So you would guess they would go around 10 o'clock, and that's right when I get on the air on DVE, the Steelers Network, 102.5 and 970 ESPN. So I'll be having that hour of draft coverage. I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, let's get into a little bit of what's going on. I guess the only kind of draft news that came out, there's kind of some silly talk about RG3, but the stuff that might impact the Steelers, as you and I talked right before we got on here, is Mike Adams, the huge tackle from Ohio State, who you have been very candid with your assessment of him as we've been going through this. Tested positive at the combine for marijuana, and there's some thought that you wrote in your article that will take him off the board, but you weren't a big fan to begin with.
Absolutely. This is a time of year where all the information, trying to slide people's stock, draft stock and all like that. But, I mean, this is a pretty, this is a pretty big thing here as far. Now, he evidently has been informing teams that he did test positive, being upfront and candid with him on that. Supposedly, I think I heard where he's completed some counseling and all like that. But, hey, you know, if it if it quacks like a duck and swims like a duck and has feathers like a duck, it's probably a duck, you know. And this has just gave me – I had been trying, and I think I had mentioned to Dave Tay Thomas in the podcast the other day, which, by the way, let me quickly interrupt the
feedback. Oh, yeah, let's get into that. We should touch on that. This is comedy.
Yeah, the feedback that we got from this podcast that we had with Dave Tay, and you got to remember, this is the second time David and I have had Dave Tay on, and we kind of did not – we knew what to expect. We just didn't know how, you know, with our larger audience now, how it would go over, because Dave Tay bounces all over the place. You give him one name, he gives you four back. He dropped a little bit of, I guess, speculation slash information on Jason Worlds and a possible move inside there. Let me just say the response we got to that episode has been overwhelming. And Dave Tay even emailed me back the other day because he was offering those free draft guides for people that emailed him and said they heard the offer on the show. And I don't know how – I assume he was joking with his number, but he had said 500 people. He says, quit advertising it. He's already sent 500 of these things out. But Dave Tay is definitely going to be a yearly guest on our show going forward with this thing. Maybe have him on again after the draft to discuss some of the things that we talked about in this one. But if you have missed that podcast, make sure you get to that and listen to it before the draft.
Yeah, now, that's some funny stuff. You know, thanks to our listeners for expanding our reach and all that. We appreciate all the support and listening, and that obviously we're not getting paid to do this. We do it because we love it and it's good fun, and when we see things like that happen, it makes us feel good.
Absolutely. Now back to Mike Adams here, who I've described several times, 5 cent head. What he shows on film, he lacks the core strength, especially just not a good run blocker in my opinion, and all not worthy of a first round pick of the Steelers. And I've been trying my best, and like I told Dave Tay during that podcast, I'm trying to give some tackle some reason to put them at that spot. I mean, of course, Riley Reiff and Khalil from USC, they'll be off the board when the Steelers pick at 24. And, you know, a lot of things that I described on the blog about Kobe Fleener and my selection in the last mock draft with him was the sheer fact that David and I went through the list of guys that could be on the board when the Steelers pick at 24 a couple of podcasts ago. I just have not been enamored with anybody in that situation, especially from a best player available slash kind of need situation. That's how Fleener has kind of reared his head into that conversation. Now, I disclaim.
Dave, let's get into this Mike the Adams thing before we get into the other guys. Let me ask you two questions. When you think about tackles, and we've got some of these really big guys, and in Adams' case, I think he goes 6'7", 6'8". Is there a size? Is a guy who is that big, is he almost by definition going to have trouble run blocking? He may be a better pass blocker, but is he going to – is there a size that where maybe you're too big to be effective in the run block? Or not.
I think it comes to an agility factor. I think you can be too big, too top-heavy as far as a second-level guy goes. I mean, let's face it, none of these guys, you know, 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", are going to run like the breeze. You know, now the better – to me, if you look at sort of their short shuttle times and the way they do some of these drills at the combine and how they move and how fluid they look, that plays a lot into it. That's not to say that there's you know, guys such as Joe Thomas, for example, from Cleveland. I think that guy moves very, very smooth and fluid for a guy his size, especially, you know, in the run game. But on the flip side, you're not asking him to go down 20 yards downfield at second level a lot of times either. So there is a definition, I think, of a size slash build that they look for, especially in a left tackle side. You want the kids, pretty much to be 6'6". You want them to have some long arms, a good wingspan to go along with it, and you want them to have some level of agility and good footwork to go along with it. So I think
gotta have that.
Yeah. I think for you to cookie cutter it, I guess, is kind of what you're asking me. I think within some limitations, yes. But on the flip side, not all guys over 300 pounds, 6'7", 6'8", are going to move good. I think their core strength plays a lot into it, into the running game, though, as well, too.
Okay, now let's get into this. you don't like him from a football perspective. And there's some talk that because he tested positive for marijuana, he's going to come off the Steeler draft board. I think Jim Wetzel tweeted that. Let me just ask you a very simple question. Do you think if a guy tests positive for marijuana, he should come off your draft board? Would you take him off your draft board?
Yes. Yes, I would. And that's my Steeler mentality in me as well, too, knowing let me preface that, David. Let me say if there's a history of character issues with this guy, let's not forget Adams. I think had been caught with a pipe before, too, and although I think it got thrown out because it didn't test positive for marijuana. I think I remember reading something about that. But it's not like it's just one instance with this guy. I think it's a culmination with this being the straw that breaks the camel back type thing.
Fair enough. How about a guy who has a clean history?
If he has a clean history and he pops a positive test prior to the combine, I would be more apt to kind of just make sure I research that. And if I'm the front office guy, I'm asking him about that. I mean, to characterize a lot, how many guys, and let me throw this back at you, how many guys in the NFL, college kids, do you think smoke marijuana?
Yeah, lots.
Okay.
And here, let me give you, I'll give you my thoughts on this, is here's the deal. Here's what would bother me. It's, you know when the combine is. It's not all of a sudden you get transported to Indianapolis. You know, I know when next year's combine is, okay? So you know if you're freaking got any intelligence and you can use the internet or anything else that you know, whatever the active ingredient is in marijuana, whatever it's called, it stays in your system roughly 30 days.
Are you?
Okay? So don't smoke it for 30 days before I'm going to – so what – annoys the crap out of me if I'm looking at this guy. I'm saying I don't necessarily care. I'd rather he didn't smoke pot, but it's you're dumb. You're just flat out dumb. And if you can't manage that part of it, I don't know that I can expect you to manage, you know, what you need to do to be prepared to play in the NFL every week. So that's the part that blows my mind with these guys. It's not a random drug test. You know when it's coming and you still tested positive. You're an idiot.
Yeah. The chemical is THC, but not that I know.
Well, yeah, I knew. I didn't want to sound like I knew all my drugs. You're the drug. You know, you told me. We went through that 2 podcasts ago.
Hey, but yeah, you're right. I mean, hey, that shows how that 5-cent head, I mean, making a decision like that. If a guy's going to make a decision like that easily.
Billions of dollars at stake.
Right. And what's he going to do once he gets the money?
Right. Yes. Yeah, all that stuff.
You know, I mean, to me, I mean, just now let's look at something maybe with this Adderall. Adderall is this new drug of choice that help with weight loss and keep them awake on drives and all.
Basically,
like that.
Basically, it's a stimulant, right?
Amphetamine, that type thing. But it's a banned substance, and you better not test positive for it.
This is what Wesley Saunders tested for.
Right, exactly. Now, I can forgive that a lot easier than I can marijuana, especially if the kid's got a fairly clean, you know, character, back character and all like that, not been in trouble in the law like that. I don't think you can look at one instance in particular on these kids. I think it's a combination of everything in their character over the course of their college career and all like that. And that's why you have some teams, you know, have private investigators that are rooting around on some of these kids. It would not surprise me if the Steelers had one guy in particular that roots around, you know, privately asking questions and all on some of these kids because character, quote unquote,
Listen, you're running a business that I totally agree with you.
But yeah, it's just dumb. It's flat out stupid, dumb. And when you throw all this on top of the red flag issues, the character issues in the past, you throw on the fact that I don't like him on film. I take the red marker and slash right through his name.
All right. So we got Mike Adams there. So, you know, you went and looked at a couple of these tackles, and I know the very first time you watched tape on Bobby Massey, I hadn't seen him before. You pointed him out to me. I know the first time you saw him, you really liked this guy, and I guess you've been back this week and watched some more tape.
Yeah, David, about Massey, and listen, trying to backstory what I was trying to mention earlier here. The reason Fleener has played a big role into my mocks and all like that is my – you know, having to find a best player available, matching a perceived need that you're not reaching on to fit in that area, that we've covered a lot of these guys that could be there. Bobby Massey is a guy that I liked initial look on tape, okay? I looked at him pretty good. I still was not convinced a guy like that could make the jump up the draft board that he's made. Of course, when you compare it to everything that you read, to everything, current rankings, it just kind of seems, you know, unfathomable. But I went back, I've been trying to make myself watch more on tackles. I went back and watched Mike Adams. I ruled him out, and this was the day or so before the pot test popped. So wasted an hour there. Bobby Massey, I spent 2 hours on last night watching LSU and Alabama. The kid is very impressive in the run game. I mentioned before that I like his kind of his kick step out. I like his footwork on top of it. The only concerns that I have seen, and this is probably my fault from watching too much film and trying to be too critical on these guys, is minor pass protection flaws. It has a deep drop at times, lets pass rushers come to him at times. He handles them. It's just bad technique. In fact, I think I don't think he allowed a sack last year. Mississippi had a horrible season last year, but he was a bright spot on the offensive line, stuck out incredibly. Did not have the best combine, but followed up with just everything you read on his pro day was tremendous. Now, all of a sudden, I'm starting to say, well, is this guy a top three tackle, David? You know, when you throw out that Cordy Glenn's probably likely considered a guard by most teams, even though I think he's a right tackle. When you throw out the Jonathan Martin, the Moore film study I did on him, I do not think he's – I think there's too much finesse. I think he's a second-round tackle. And you throw in Mike Adams, whatever you want him to be, first round, late first round, just off the Steelers board. Is Mike Adams worthy of being a first-round tackle? Rob Ring has come out on CBS Sports and I think ranked him now.
Bobby Massey or Mike Adams? You just
I'm saying Bobby Massey is now ranked 33 on Rob Ring's list. Now, this is a big jump, but this jump has been happening over the last few weeks here with Massey. Let me ask you, and we've kind of gone through this before, as far as Steelers need go, there's an axis somewhere where best player available meets perceived need and priority of need. When you look at the Steelers tackle situation, David, basically we've got Marcus Gilbert, we've got Willie Colon, who Willie Colon is an injury concern. Mike Tomlin let us know that a couple weeks ago. Behind that, you got Jonathan Scott, which I think we both agree that's bad depth. Behind that, you have nothing. Is tackle position enough need that if it was considered even a reach of around 10 or 11 spots, and if Bobby Massey's that high up on the Steelers board, is that your pick?
Well, I guess you answered it right there with that last sentence. It depends where he is on their board. And one of the things I want to say about just an overarching comment here first is I do find it very funny and almost to the point of being ludicrous that when we talk about the draft, and this is just when the thousands of people who talk about the draft, that they can absolutely differentiate the 17th best player from the 24th best player. I mean, it's a science. It's an art. It's a lot of people putting in a lot of work. But at the end of the day, these are athletes. They're young men. They're going to evolve differently. We see it every year that guys, you have an Antonio Brown in the sixth round. You have guys in the first round who don't make it. So guys talk so definitively about who is what and try to delineate each level. Like it's very clear. It's not. So the thing is, I think what's kind of funny, Dave, is the Steelers do have a philosophy of best athlete available, and I generally think that's true. But the reality is that every year now there are enough spots of need in the organization that these things do – the axes do cross, and they're going to go – I mean, because they could go inside linebacker, because they could go even safety, because they can go anywhere in the interior line or nose tackle, essentially you're going to get kind of the best of those players. Because I'll tell you, if Michael Floyd from Notre Dame drops to 24, I bet my house the Steelers don't take him, even though he might be the best athlete available on the board. I just don't see it happening. Now, maybe they would. Maybe they'd shock me and say Wallace is going to leave next year and they'll take Floyd. But I do think that kind of thing I think we get not you and I, but I do think the draft Knicks get a little too what's the right word, arrogant in their kind of grading guys and being able to, you know, differentiate each individual guy.
And let's face it, it's educated guessing, okay?
Right.
And the more educated that you get, the better you increase your chances.
Well said, well said.
Of doing so. It's like fantasy football. People ask me for years, well, is it luck or is it skill? And it's educated guessing. The more homework you do, trends and stuff like that, and the more film you watch and the better you learn how to grade players, the better you're going to get at it, I think. But is it foolproof? Absolutely not. I mean, there is an axis somewhere with the Steelers. Now, you know, they're not afraid, and you hit it on the head, David, that they could go in probably four different directions, five different positional directions here, inside linebacker, tackle, guard, safety. I even made a very strong argument, I think, for tight end. But somewhere in there,
and nose tackle.
And nose tackle. And somewhere in there, they grade these players. These players get grades, okay? It's not like it's 1 through 100 as far as a grading system like or not. It's usually in what the traditional 9-point whatever, 8-point whatever, you know, 6-point. And they go that way. So when you're stacking your board, of course, you're going to stack one guy better than the other if character issues or something like that, and that plays into the grade. But at some point, you're not going to take a top-rated quarterback that falls to you if you have a Ben Roethlisberger and you have perceived need at a tackle position. You can bounce this back and forth off several positions like that. I think the more that I go back and I look at the Steelers' needs, and really, I mean, yeah, answer that earlier question here, David, is how important of a need do you think tackle is with the Steelers?
I think it's an important need. It is not absolutely need to be addressed this year because I do think it's a depth thing. I think it depends a lot on how you see Willie Colon, what kind of guy you think he is. The Steelers might be able to go in the market and find a another Jonathan Scott, another Nate Newton, maybe not as good as Nate Newton, but a guy who's going to be available to provide depth, a Max Starks maybe. So I don't think it's a need if you think Willie Colon can play for a couple years. Obviously, we don't know what kind of injuries the Steelers are going to sustain this year other than the fact that they're going to get some. So I don't see it as big a need as I do at some of the other areas. Having said that, it's a very important position, obviously, and I'm not opposed to them going that way. And let me just follow – I'm going to circle back to this question we've had about Mike Adams. You do take guys off your board, and I think that's an important thing to do because you're taking them off your board for a reason, and that way you don't see his name. If Mike Adams is there in the third round and he's off your board, you're not taking him, right?
If I've filled that need and I have other needs, no. I mean, if I've taken a tackle, if I've taken Bobby Massey in a round.
No, you haven't. Hey, let's see, you haven't taken a tackle.
Man, that's...
He's off your board. He's off your board, right?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Why are you going to tie up money otherwise?
Okay, now if Mike Adams is there in the third round, do you take him?
As much, we said there's an axis at the top where value meets need. On the bottom end, there's got to be a value versus what, risk?
Yes, right, exactly.
Okay. God, where that axis meets, I don't know. I mean, it's such a hypothetical, I guess. I guess it could happen with Adams.
I don't think he goes to, but he could go. He could, you know, there's an outside chance he could be there in the second round.
Yeah, I agree. But I guess, and that's interesting to think about. I mean, there's an axis somewhere where risk meets value, on the bottom end of the scales.
And this is what they talk about: guys screwing up the draft is because they don't follow their board. And somebody was talking about how the Rams didn't do this under whoever Devaney or whoever was in there more recently. And I think one of the things you have to do, and this is interesting stuff, I think, to think about and talk about, is that if a guy's off your board, he's off your board. If he's a first-round talent, let's say Janoris Jenkins is off your board and he's in the fifth round, his name's still there. Well, he's obviously off everybody else's board too, or that, you know, enough people think the same things you do. I do not think you can be swayed no matter how talented a guy is if you've taken him off your board. Now, having said that, I would only take guys off the board. Well, you're going to take guys off the board for the obvious reasons. I think we can all agree generally on what those types of things may be. So it would be if Mike Adams is – if he's off the Steelers board and he's there in the fourth round, they're not going to take him. But it would be very interesting to see how that process goes. And I don't think you want to deviate from what you've done with all your preparation by watching things happen and then trying to reevaluate something that you already decided on.
Well, yeah, and usually if somebody's going to drop that, it's going to be more than a drug test, though. There's something else usually involved. This guy either crapped the bed on film or he's got an injury issue that they found out maybe during the combine.
Right, and it would be unlikely for every team to know that and nobody else to know it. So generally that
exactly.
stuff gets out.
Exactly. I mean, I understand your hypothetical there. And, hey, who knows? Maybe Adams does drop to the top of the third round. I find that highly unlikely. But hey, you'll nail it if it does happen there. Not that the Steelers will take him, I don't think, but I, you know, if he does fall that far. But back to the knee thing. Tomlin has expressed, fear in Willie Colon. I think it's a legitimate fear with the 2 years and all like that. I do think both those were kind of freakish type injuries that Colon had. But behind that, can you risk
your season?
Your season by having Jonathan Scott behind there or some other street free agent this time of year. Now, they brought in Demetrius Bell for a look. Now, was that Sean Coogler trying to do one of his boys a favor to up his value, in free agency by having him make a free agent visit? I mean, let's be obvious. They weren't going to pay this guy anything over the minimum, even if he did sign. So,
He got a good chunk of change in that first year from the Eagles, didn't he?
Yeah, and it's a 1 year deal. I mean, it's a 5 year deal, but as we said, it's just a 1 year deal on paper.
But it was a big number, like $5 or something, right?
It was up there. Yeah, I don't remember the exact number.
And that's because Peters tore his Achilles, and they were, it all of a sudden became a seller's market.
Right. So I mean, now did the Steelers bring him in, to legitimate look at him or what? Now when you go back, here's the thing: Kobe Fleener. Everybody's informing me Kobe Fleener did not come in for a free agent visit. Yes, I'm well aware of that. I was hoping he would be one. It would help solidify kind of my reasoning what's been going on. Not that it's a prerequisite that they come in for a pre-draft visit to be drafted number one. Cameron Hayward didn't come in last year, but the other thing is. Colbert was out that pro day, but he very well could have been taking a good look at Jonathan Martin in addition to that, and of course checking in on David DeCastro as well too. Now when you look and you start, now that these pre-draft visits are complete, you start stacking them as far as what rounds these guys are probably going to be taken in the draft and all like that. Now you have some top-rated tackles up in there and Mike Adams. Maybe they just want to see how big of a shithead he really is up close and personal. Mitchell Schwartz is probably a second.
Let's not go too over the top on Mike Adams. You know, we don't know the guy, but he's made some bad decisions along the way.
Yeah, I'm calling a spade, though. Okay. Mitchell Schwartz from California was in. Mike Adams, as I said, was in. Bobby Massey was in. And seems like I'm missing some another one here. But anyway, I mean, that tells you right there, they're looking at top round tackles now,
and as you pointed out, they've had a boatload of tight ends come in too.
Yeah, but here's the thing: when you stack those are mid-round guys.
Yes, those are mid-round guys. Absolutely.
Now if they would have had Fleener in along with the kid
from Georgia too.
Well, Clemson or the kid out of Georgia there, I would more say, okay, well maybe there's something to them. Dwayne Allen's a kid I'm trying to think of from Clemson. If they would have had him in along with Fleener mixed in with the Egg News and the kid from Oregon, Paulson. I would have more evidence to say, okay, well if they don't get the top one of these top two round guys, maybe they're looking at a middle round guy. The more homework I do now, when you stack these pre-draft visits, it looks to me like they're considering a tackle, an inside linebacker, or a guard in the early rounds, just by looking at the visits alone. Second round, maybe a guard, maybe a defensive end type, maybe an outside linebacker type when you start stacking these visits up there. Maybe even an outside linebacker in the first round because they did have Nick Perry from USC as well. Now, of course, they're going to look at possibly a Stephen Hill, a guy that could be on the board. I'm not reading too much terribly into that. But, you know, the more you start stacking these things, and the thing that makes me wonder about Massey, David, is he was one of the first visits, one of the early visits in April. I think 4-4 was the date that he came in. That was about the time, I think, that started to hear rumblings that Massey's starting to shoot up the board after his pro day and all like that. I don't have evidence that, Colbert was at the Mississippi pro day. If any of our listeners know for sure Colbert was at that Mississippi pro day, that would be useful information, in my opinion, to have. But I'm trying to give you where my mind at is in far. Everybody thinks I'm locked in Kobe Fleener, or Kobe Fleener, or Kobe Fleener. But I've tried, and as I told you, I'm trying to insert a tackle back into this talk here, and that's where I'm at with Bobby Massey. So our listeners, am I crazy to have Bobby Massey, you know, as a third tackle on the board, a late possible first-round selection?
Okay, I'll answer for the listeners. No, I don't think it's crazy. I think it's interesting stuff when we talk about positional value, and I just do, I really honestly, Dave, like you said, when you have five areas of need, you can say you took the best athlete available, but they're going to take him because let's say there are nine areas. You know, if you have five areas of need, you better take one of those five areas of need. I mean, you know, look, it just makes sense, and that's enough breadth to find good players. And, you know, the Steelers have done a good job over the years. They've hit on their first-round picks. They've found guys in the middle rounds that have been more than just useful players. They've been Pro Bowl-type players on occasion. So we'll see where they go. It is interesting to see who comes in and how that all plays itself out. I mean, I think Antonio Brown did come in the year he was drafted. So, you know, we look through these guys, and it is they're not putting up smoke screens in general. So, you know, you do see, you know, who what kind of guys they're looking for and who they think is an interesting guy. There might be a smoke screen or two, but generally I think they're, you know, this is useful stuff and they want to make it as useful as possible. Just like you said, you want to do your homework, so you might as well have the guys come in that you think you might be interested in. So, yeah, we do get kind of a look behind the curtain when that kind of stuff happens. So
I think it also makes it easier with the later round guys. I mean, heck, we saw what last year Baron Batch made a pre-draft visit, although I didn't find out about it until after the draft. He was one of the missing two or three names that I was missing on my list, but he came in. You mentioned back when Antonio came in, I think Emmanuel Sanders made a visit. There, you know, there've been several over the years that you can especially in the later rounds, you say aha. You know, and that's what makes building, in my opinion, with mock drafts, of course, these things can fall, you know, anyway. It makes it filling in some of these late-round guys into the equation on mock drafts easier because, A, you know there's interest in them because they brought them in, and also along with the pro day visits that Colbert and some of the other scouts and all make and who's in attendance there. So it is interesting. It's like being a detective, you know, you're going back and you're looking at trends, you're looking at these visitors, the pro draft visits. It's what makes it all fun. And then you get to the real meat and potatoes, which is the tape, you know, which you should be watching in the first place, and you try to tie all these things together. So that's where my head is at. My final mock draft will be out probably the day before, probably next Wednesday late at night, and make y'all wait that long because – I'm still not sold which way I'm going overall.
All right, Dave. Two things before we wrap things up here. Let me just ask you this: we talked about this right before we got on the air. Is now people have had, you know, realistically here, almost 2 months to look at these guys and evaluate these guys, and it's just what you said. When you look at them that often and that much, you're going to find something wrong with every player. Now teams are going to, you know, maybe try to push people one direction or push them another, and as you said, kind of knock somebody's stock down maybe so that he's around when they want him. But we do see that stuff, and as fans, you want to just keep hearing new names. You get tired of hearing the same names, you know. But having said that, are we starting to ignore Dont'a Hightower and kind of maybe at this point, just as fans, not as on tape or where he stacks on the board, just kind of undervaluing the fact that even though he was immediately linked to the Steelers from almost day one by a lot of different people, that he still might be the right pick?
He very well could, David. I mean, I'm not as high on him as most are. I put up a comparison last night of all the measurables of the linebackers of the Steelers over to since Colbert took over versus the guys, the top linebackers on the board and all like that. I think, you know, it's always when you get to these things in Steeler Nation and any fan base in particular, it's always fun to be the cool kid and go against the grain.
Yeah, have a different idea, exactly.
Right, and I've been accused of that with Fleener, and with good reason, because it is kind of off a little bit out of the realm, although I still do think Fleener is a top-rated talent. I just, when I stack my board and who I think's going to be there, stack it versus need, before putting Bobby Massey into the equation here, that's where I was at. And when you throw my Colbert best player available that meets perceived value, you know, that's how I came up with it. Are other people that way? Sure, everybody has their own reason. Everybody wants to be right in these mock drafts. That's
right.
You know, everybody.
And with as many people who are doing stuff, there's not an idea out there that hasn't been presented by somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure somebody out there has already had Bobby Massey in number one for the Steelers, you know, for months. Okay. God bless you if you have. I mean, somebody's going to be right here and somebody's going to be wrong. And the tendency is to go back and list as many players as you can and sit and after the draft's over, if you didn't get the pick right, you can say, well, see, I told you so and so.
Yeah, back in March, I threw this name out.
And it's easy to do, and that's why when my mock draft's on top of it, I'll list five or six players like I did last year, David, that I considered for the position. Is that for me to go back and say, aha? No, it shows where my mind was at in the situation.
We've done enough of that, patting ourselves on the back with Mike Wallace, so we probably can do less of that in the draft.
Yeah, plus I hit the top three last year. If I do that again, if I hit the top three, regardless of what round that they're drafting this year, I'm going to be speechless.
Well, you're going to be on television.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I've got a face for podcasts, but
I'll bring you into the war room next year. We'll dismiss everything else, and we'll just have you do it.
But back to the question: Is Dante Hightower first round talent? I think so. Is he a late first round talent? I think so. I just think compared to what he very well could be the pick, David. I'm not going to rule that out. Have people kind of dropped him down? Has his stock kind of fallen? The more draftniks kind of watch tape and read and watch the NFL Network and listen to Mike Mayock, perhaps so. Could he still go in the top 20? I think that's a possibility, too. We don't know how teams stack their board, and we don't know how closely they follow need versus best player available. So I'm not ready to rule him out as a pick, but, yes, his stock has dropped over the last, two, 3 weeks.
All right, so let's go on a slightly larger topic, not so Steeler-focused here as we close things up. There is a lot of talk. Again, I find it just a little bit maybe silly is not the right word. I don't know what the right word is. But, you know, there is a group of people that there's six guys at the top of the draft are the six guys. Everybody says these six guys are the elite talents. Just these six. Take them. Bang. We can name them. Everybody seems to have identified these same six guys. Now, there's a lot of talk, Dave. Now, the new CBA has really made these high picks, I think, more valuable because you don't have to break the bank to sign them. So we have a kind of an adjustment of value in the top round, and then we saw it last year. All of a sudden, there's a run on quarterbacks. They go Locker and Ponder, and these guys all go much higher than maybe people initially perceived. There's a sense that there are going to be a lot of trades here on Thursday night, a lot of guys moving around. Let's not speculate on the Steelers, but we saw this trade last year, and I said as soon as I saw it, when Cleveland traded back with the Falcons, I thought it was one of the best trades I'd ever seen. The Falcons, from Cleveland's standpoint, I think the Falcons way overpaid to go up and get Julio Jones. He may end up being a Pro Bowl receiver, but what they gave up was a boatload. Do you expect to see a lot of action on the trade front on Thursday?
I don't expect it to be as big of a jump, as big of a deal as that. No, You nailed it too. These picks are more valuable now because they cost less to sign. It's not like someone's willing to jump jump.
Guys wanted to move back because they didn't want to pay somebody $35 million.
Exactly. I don't see that much movement in the top. Now, do I think there's going to be a trade in the first round, maybe two? Yeah, I think there very well could be. And even though you said you don't want to speculate about the Steelers, and I'm not one to speculate about this either, but after doing my homework, and if Bobby Massey is the third-rated tackle that might be at the board a couple spots later in the draft, it would not, and based on the way I've broken everything down, it would not hurt my feelings at all for them to pop down four spots to pick up, I don't know, a late second and maybe a third or whatever the cost ends up being to do that. Because I think this talent's loaded with some second and third round type prospects that could help the Steelers a lot in some need areas.
Would you trade with the Ravens in the first round?
If they wanted to, yeah. I mean, a lot of people say...
You wouldn't rule them out just because they're in the division.
I wouldn't rule them out. I mean, no. Now, would I trade them a player? No.
No. Would you just straight picks? If they wanted, let's say they wanted Hightower and he wasn't your guy, and you get their third and a seventh or whatever it is. You wouldn't rule, if you think it's fair value, you do the trade even if it's the Ravens.
I think you hit it on the head. I think if it's fair value and you're going to be able to get the player, one of, let's say, three players or whatever, whatever the drop is that you think that you're comfortable getting and can pick up some of those other picks. Because let's face it, the Steelers are going to be trading some of these back-end picks, I have a feeling, too. I don't think they come out of this draft with 10 draft picks total. I could be wrong. I think more along the lines about eight or nine, possibly. I think they're going to be some maneuvering in there somewhere. But, I would not be afraid to trade draft picks within a division. You can't play defense in the draft, in my opinion.
No, exactly. That's exactly right. David, I tell you, I'm going to say this again. I said it at the beginning. I really hope the Steelers draft a kicker and or a punter if they're going to keep any of these supplemental picks. I haven't looked at that area of the draft closely enough, but if there's a guy that is clearly the guy, I think I'm a bigger sushi fan than virtually any Steeler fan. I'm a big fan of sushi, and if he's the kicker next year, I'm just fine with it. But as you said, you can't bring in a ton of guys, and if you can't move picks, I'd like to see him, because those guys don't go off the board. If you can get the best guy to get the best kicker or the best punter that's available.
Yeah, I can see that, especially in the seventh round, one of those compensatories. But on the flip side, how good of argument can you as soon as this draft starts winding down, that's when they get on the phone and start calling all these guys that could be potential undrafted free agents.
That was one of the fun things we missed last year because of the CBA.
Sign
any of those guys.
Exactly. All that flurry starts right after the draft, and instead it had to wait. But you're on the phone. You're trying to sell these kids of an opportunity on top of it. And if I'm the Steelers, I've got a pretty good selling point. Look, we signed Swisham to a long-term deal, but if you look at his signing bonus and all, we can cut him and not miss a beat and not have the cap dead money hit that most people think we have. You come into this camp, you're going to be given every opportunity to compete. It's not like you're going against a David Akers or Ryan Suckup or something like that. You're going to have a legitimate chance to make this squad. Same with the punter. They're not married to Jeremy Kapanos, okay? They've already parted ways, and we know Daniel Sepulveda is not going to be back. If you can sell this kid enough, now, of course, a lot of it might come down to signing bonus, but a lot of your skill position guys will choose one team over the other because their agent might tell them, look, you have a pretty good chance maybe of cracking the 53 with this team. So I guess it comes with how big a selling point can you make towards the tail end of the draft to some of these kickers or punters, and there's going to be a slew of them available. Can you make a selling point to them that, hey, we're not going to pick you, but if you go undrafted, you're going to have a solid opportunity to compete for a job in training camp.
Yeah, that's a good point. And as you said, you do get these late round picks, and it means you don't have to go try to sell versus 20, 31 other teams.
True.
So So maybe you want to use the pick on a positional a higher positional value. Although I do think kicker and punter are high positional value. I think it always blows my mind when people try to downplay the importance of that stuff. Dave, last question for you today. In the big picture, the NFL overarching picture, all the conversation that's gone on over the past 6 weeks, we're kind of settled down on the top two picks. There's a lot of, you know, whispering about Khalil in Minnesota and what they'll do, and then who Cleveland goes with at four. What's kind of the most interesting league-wide storyline or player in the draft in your mind kind of here, obviously at the top end of the draft? Which one is maybe kind of most entertaining for you to follow?
I have not been paying attention to the RG3 and Andrew Luck.
Well, that's done. They're done. You know? So let's just say that's done.
I think the Janoris Jenkins stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Is kind of fun to see what's going on there.
For me, it's this Tannehill stuff. People are all over the map, and as we talk about, you know, run on franchise quarterbacks. And guys are now killing Matt Barkley at USC. He's getting locked down in player evaluation. The kid at Oklahoma is getting locked down in player evaluation. These guys are perceived to be the top kind of guys coming out next year. And Tannehill's athleticism's off the charts, but his production wasn't so good. You have him, you know, maybe Miami trading up to four or Miami waiting at eight. I think this guy, I'm not sold on this guy. I don't think he's the answer. I think at best he'll be, I think he reminds you a little bit of Jake Locker, who I do like a little bit. But I think this guy shouldn't go in the top 15 picks. He's absolutely going to go in the top 15 picks. And I'm going to be curious to see if he goes 4, 8, or if there's a surprise and he goes somewhere else.
You know how teams panic? It seems like every year, man, these teams panic will climb up.
And that's it. That you got to be disciplined in your board. Now, you're right. And by the way, Dave, just a sidelight, how amazing is it that I think it was Minnesota missed their pick, didn't get their pick in on time?
Oh,
first
round
pick?
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, unless you're doing it from a pure money standpoint, you know, to lower his slotted value, unless
it's the dumbest thing ever.
And you knew, let's say you knew you were going to get your guy, but you know, you take him a pick later because you're trying to save a, you know, a slotting in as far as kind of, I think that's ridiculous. I don't see how that happens.
I mean, it happened. When it happened? 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I mean, you just
said yeah, a couple years ago. And, you know, somebody, I think there's even odds out there somewhere that there's good, you know, that it will happen again this year.
Well, yeah, and it's really dumb now because it's the dollars are so small between different areas. I mean, I can see if you're on the phone trying to make a trade, but, you know, you have to be, you know, with 1 minute to go, hang up all the phones, let's get the pick in. I mean, it just shows, I think it is the absolute worst reflection on an organization of anything that could ever happen.
And, you know, you asked me about quarterbacks. I got to be honest with you. I have not paid close attention, not like I did last year. The Cam Newton thing was intriguing, you know, will he or won't he type thing. And, boy, did I miss the boat on him. But if that guy, you know, continues to play the way he's been playing, hats off to George Whitfield Jr. with the job that he did with him. But I just, you know, if I know that they're not going to be on the Steelers board positional-wise, I have so much film, so much reading to do that I kind of ignore them. That being said, Chris DeMarino did a piece a couple of weeks ago on Tannehill, how Steeler Nation should not be scared if Cleveland Browns end up with Tannehill. So, that you know, that's kind of a worth a read there, and he's not enamored with him either. So for me to give you an honest assessment on him, I have not watched much tape on him. But it seems like every year, though, I mean, let's look at the Dolphins. Those guys, I mean, they need a quarterback, right?
You know I'm a Matt Moore fan, so I think this whole thing's a little bit off to begin with. I think Matt Moore is a good quarterback.
Yeah, and very well. I mean, I think we'll see in the first two rounds real quick how enamored they are with Matt Moore.
Obviously not that enamored because, you know, this isn't all a smokescreen. So.
Right. So, but I, you know, how many quarterbacks do you think are going to go in the first round? I guess that's kind of your question, though.
Yeah, well, he's going to go in the first round. I think Whedon probably goes in the second round, and he may end up in Cleveland. You know, he's 29. I don't know. I don't know how much that matters. That's another interesting topic. You know, a guy's 29. He's going to be 29 in October. So, you know, he can still be your quarterback for 8 years, you know, or 6 years or whatever. He's a mature guy. He's a winner. You watch these. By the way, how good are the Gruden QB? I don't know if you've seen.
Oh, man, they're awesome. I have watched those. Yeah.
You really do get some insight into a guy. And that's the conversation the Steeler brass has with guys when they come in. And it is. And Gruden's great at that. That's some fun stuff. The other guy I want to ask you about, Dave, again, this is getting longer than I anticipated, but it's good to know. Cleveland at 4 is really interesting, obviously, for divisional purposes. Cincinnati has 2 picks in the first round. They're going to get 2 good players. The Cleveland thing at 4, I am a huge fan of Trent Richardson. I think he is your guy, and I would take him at 4. I don't have any problem with that. Do you have any problem with that?
I don't have any problem taking him there either. He's going to be around this league for years. I think he's got Pro Bowl written all over him down the line, if he stays healthy and all like that. So, I mean, his versatility, everything he brings to the table, seems to be a sturdy, well-built back, can do it all. So I have no problem taking him there.
All right. Well, listen, great stuff. We will be back on Tuesday. We'll give you our Steeler first round picks. We'll hit this stuff one more time. We'll close the coffin on the Mike Wallace watch. And, I don't expect a lot of activity in the free agent market from here to the draft. So, we'll go through this one more time and send us any questions or comments you have. You're following Dave, I know, on Steelers Depot. That's at Steelers Depot. Only a 13th of you are following me on at Hammer Speaks. Let's sort that out. I need those numbers higher. And as I said, I'll be doing the draft on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from Steeler headquarters, Dave.
And remember that you can also listen to that on the Steelers Nation radio site as well. They're covering that. I heard them promo David yesterday. As a matter of fact, all those sites have the iHeartRadio app. Make sure you download that if you have to work or you have to take the wife shopping or something like that as well, too. We have gotten in several people that have sent emails. We have them. We hope we have addressed some of these. Some of this stuff is going to be good stuff to talk about that you have after the draft, non-draft type questions. But as you can tell, these podcasts have been, they've been just wide open, packed the last few weeks. We try to keep them around 45 to 55 minutes or so and not doing a good job at that sometimes. So without further ado, we're getting your questions. Send them in. We're trying to get more of them. And David, take us out.
Yeah, Dave, just one last question. How are you going to spend the last 6 days? What are you going to look at? What are you going to focus on?
I'm going to focus on offensive line. I'm going to focus in on a lot more deeper tape on these guys back end of the draft, rounds 5, 6, 7, some of these free agent or these pre-draft visitors that I've not done extensive study on. But I'll be here in the office the whole time, 24/7.
All right, well, fantastic work. Hopefully, you've got a Pens game to watch tonight. Hopefully, you'll have one on Sunday and Tuesday. Go Pens. Let's Pens in 7. Let's hope that happens. The Pirates are home Friday. It's Pittsburgh Sports cranking up, and we will be at it Tuesday afternoon, and we'll get at you Friday morning. We'll try to get something out right after the first round. So, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.